On this episode of the Salary Scramble.
But then this one time, I knew we didn't have money in the account.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I knew she was going to come and ask. But I don't know, it's like I'm pretending it doesn't exist or something. I don't even know what I was thinking. But yeah, she asked for the codes. I'm like, madam, I don't have. There's nothing in the account. You know what I mean?
Boss moves, late nights, big dreams, tough fights, payrolls tight, pressure's real. But this is The Hustle, the founder's deal. Welcome to the Salary Scramble with Lee Kasumba, where glossy titles end and real founder stories begin.
I am really, really excited to have you on the podcast. I'll tell you why.
Listen. Okay.
I think it's like, I've told you this before, but I want to share with everybody the first time that I met you. I was for the Her Network Summit. I was a person interviewing you for the spotlight. And I remember that particular day we were meant to have a meeting because you wanted to, you know, talk to people before and all of that. So I'm like, sure, something, no problem. And I remember that morning I took supplements without eating anything. And then all of a sudden, like my tummy, I got so ill. Like my tummy, you know when like everything is pulling? I was like, what's going on? And I was like, should I cancel this? Should I not cancel it? And I literally dragged myself to your office. Like the whole drive there, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to make it. That's why when you offered anything, I'm like, I'll just have a little bit of water because I didn't know what was going to happen.
You said warm water specifically. I was like, that's an interesting request.
Yeah, because I was trying to take care of myself. I'm like, I can't embarrass myself in front of this lady. But what was so nice is like, I get there and I wasn't feeling in my best, you know? And then as soon as I got in and you welcomed me so nicely and you just gave me this big hug and you just filled with so much joy and you radiated just like amazing things. And I was like, I suddenly felt better, like all of a sudden. And I knew from that moment, I'm like, yep, there's something special about her. And I could understand why you have such a successful business planning weddings and events because everybody wants that kind of person. So Abukoma Ellis, the founder, creative director of Purple Twirl Group. Welcome to the Salary Scramble.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, Leslie. But yes, no, the feeling is mutual. When I met you the first time, it just felt natural. We sat on this couch here for like, the time went so fast. I didn't realize how quickly the time went. But yes, it was lovely meeting you. And it's been great.
Icebreaker.
I'm going to get into some like icebreakers so people can get to know you just a little bit. So the first one, so before we even get into the business and all of that, I would like to know as an entrepreneur, right? What's your entrepreneurial fuel? Is it coffee, vibes, pure adrenaline, smoothie or other?
It's vibes. And on a really hard day, coffee. I'm trying to stop drinking coffee. But on a really hard day, I would drink coffee, but usually it's vibes.
Vibes, nice. Yeah. So if your bank account could talk at the end of the month, what would it say to you?
It'd be like, girl, you sure about that? It's like, oh, look at every purchase I'm making and be like, madam, what's up?
And have you ever had a this can't be real life moment, either at in the office or at an event where you're just like, this can't be my life. How did I get here?
Listen. Yes, I have. I think the most recent one was, and it was one of those moments where I had to kind of snap back to reality and be like, woman, you asked for this.
Yeah.
Be grateful, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a trip that I had to make to Mauritius to do a venue recce for an event. And the time that it was scheduled for, it was during a really busy period where at a point where the trip was frustrating to me. And I'm like, woman, like, can you hear yourself? You have a business trip. You're going to Mauritius, a beautiful island, to go meet vendors and see venues and things like that. And you're complaining? You can't complain. You know, so that whole process of me up and going, business class, you're in the hotel, all paid for by the clients. You know, like just living that moment, it just felt like, wow, I really did dream about this and it really is happening. I literally sent to my friend group, I'm like, I can't believe this is my life. You know, so yeah, I've definitely had those moments.
So weddings are always like a really big thing. I know that the Purple Twill group does a lot of different kinds of events, but let me say with weddings specifically, they're a really big deal. Mm-hmm. If you could have like one celebrity client who's either been married or not married yet and could have them as your client anywhere in the world, who would it be? Whose wedding would you want to plan?
Oh, that's a good question. Oprah.
Oprah.
Oprah's wedding. Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness, it would be so beautiful. See, and you know, Oprah also has that kind of money that you can do whatever you want. Like, you know, that's one of the things I love about planning weddings, right? It's like, I can dream it and use someone's money to make it happen. It's not my money. And then at the end of the day, you pay me. Yes, please. I'll do Oprah's wedding any day. Like I love that. I also feel like Oprah is like the type of person who would, she would be open to ideas, you know, because I typically love the kind of bride that will come to me and is open to ideas and not the ones that, I mean, they're the different personalities, right? But sometimes some people know exactly what they want. I want it this way, I want it this way, I want it that way. But then I love the ones that kind of give you the reins. And they're like, I'm not sure. What do you think? And then the brain just keeps going. And that's where the creative juices just go crazy. So yeah, I feel like Oprah would be that type of bride.
Listen, if Oprah decides to get married, I'm very sure, like, you've put it out there. So she's going to call you.
Listen.
And you better invite me. Listen, I'll work for you on that day just to be there. I'll be in the hotel room.
Deal. But no worries. You'll be a budget item on there somewhere.
Thank you. And then the final one, how would you describe your personality as a wedding planner? Like I mentioned to you, I love wedding movies, right? Yeah. So are you more of a Marion St. Clair in Bride Wars, the untouchable, Jennifer Lopez character in The Wedding Planner, where she basically falls in love with the groom.
With the groom.
Or are you Wonu in The Wedding Party, you know, who's always fixing her wig, like, perfection?
Oh no, I'm definitely not that one. I'm definitely not the wedding party. Maybe a combination of the first two. See, it's crazy because my personality when I'm working and when I'm not working, it's like, it's a Gemini thing apparently. I'm a Gemini.
Yeah.
So I'm like two separate people. So when I'm working, it's very structured and very, it's work where. Time, let's go, 5 minutes, you know? Yeah. So that's my work personality, which is completely different from like the person you get when I'm not working.
Okay, love that.
Yeah.
So now, so whenever it comes to starting a business or having a business, just with everything, there's always a lot in a name, right? So I'm really curious, with Purple Twirl, did the name come first or the business?
Oh, the name came first. Yeah. The name came first. So the name came from, so Purple Twirl, apart from it sounding really nice, it just sounded very unique. And I felt like the type of clients, because when I started, I knew exactly what type of clients I wanted to service. And it felt right. What in the sense that purple is like, it's a color for royalty. You know, if you look, purple is royalty, it's riches, it's opulence, and these are the clients that I want, you know. So I want my clients to feel like royalty, or I want royalty as clients, you know, both ways. Yeah. So that's where the purple color came from. And then the twirl came from, so when I started Purple Twirl, clearly it was purely a wedding planning business. So if you think about the ultimate love story, the ultimate wedding story, it's Cinderella, right? Now Cinderella, in that time, I feel like her wedding planner was her godmother. Cinderella's godmother was her wedding planner. And what did she have? She had a wand. So I'm the godmother with a wand. And what am I doing with a wand? Swirling it to make everything happen. Yes. Yeah. So purple twirl. So we twirl everything with the wand and make everything perfect for the bride.
I love it.
Yes.
Oh, I love the way that your mind thinks. Like, you really, but you could definitely tell that you're creative because you think about everything in detail. So is it safe to say that you always wanted to be a wedding planner, or were you doing something else and then wedding planning fell on your lap?
Oh, it fell on my lap. It was not on the radar at all. Yeah. So I'm like a science geek. I'm a science nerd. I went to school. I'm a science student. So I studied microbiology, botany, focused on microbiology in university. Yes, I'm a science student. I have a BSc in microbiology. So imagine, maybe that's where the attention to detail comes in. But yes, yeah. So I was on the trajectory of going into medical school. My dad was a doctor, African household. My dad is a doctor. You have to be a doctor, kind of, but not really.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that didn't work out. So even after school, after university, I didn't know what I wanted to do, you know. So this is me. I'm not in medical school. In my head, I've had in my head to be like a medical doctor for years. And that didn't work out. So now I'm like, okay, what do I do? I have no idea.
Yeah.
So after school, I was just looking for work and everything. And during that time too, two friends of mine from university were getting married. So I was helping them plan their wedding, right? So in helping them plan their wedding, I was like, huh, there could be something here. You know what I mean? Sure. So like I, there were all these creative ideas that came from planning their wedding and things that I was doing with my hand and just getting very creative with how the event should go. And that definitely sparked an interest over there. Of course, at the time, I'm also still trying to see if I could be a lawyer because I didn't know I couldn't be a doctor. I know.
Yeah.
I know. It didn't immediately click to me that I could start my own business because that was never an idea. That was never a thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to find a job in an office while trying to go into law school, but not really because it's also not my passion. And then I'm helping them plan their wedding. And then while I'm trying to find a job, and I have to do national service at this time too, right? So national service is what we do after university. So during the whole national service time, I start working on gift hampers, you know, which is also not related, but kind of. But it just also brought out my very creative side of putting things together. I did it very uniquely in wrapping them in fabric baskets. Oh my gosh, you're making me go back in time. This was literally 50 years ago. So I'm doing that. I'm carrying the baskets to the studios and they're shooting it. I'm doing flyers. I'm doing pop-ups. And at the same time, so while this is happening, I'm also online. At that time, it was just Facebook. So I'm also online on Facebook. I can't even remember how I did it, but then I used to do these collages. I'll pick different photos from Google, put them all together, like color code them, put them all together, start posting on Instagram. I'm a wedding planner. I had no idea about it, but I said I was. You know, what was very clear though was that I did not want to be a decorator. That there were quite a number of decorators in Ghana, but I had not really come across a wedding planner who did just that, you know? So I started kind of putting word out, wedding planning. I would let my friends who are traveling, I'd buy a wedding planning book to learn about it. You know, I just started investing in myself and in the craft. And then my very first client came from Facebook, funny enough. So this gentleman, he was Nigerian. And, you know, at the time, I think wedding planning versus wedding decorators were very separate in Nigeria, but it wasn't a thing in Ghana. So this guy was Nigerian, but he lived in Ghana and was marrying a Ghanaian lady. He reached out to me on Facebook and was like, yes, he's looking for a wedding planner. I'm like, okay. And then I have this thing where when I start something, right? I always like, yeah, we do this all the time. So yeah, I have this thing where when I start something, I like the very first time I do it, I give the impression like I've been doing it forever because otherwise confidence, right? they have to believe you know? So I did that event for the first time. And with that particular event, which is very interesting, I've literally tried to find the location for the longest time. I cannot find it. It was literally a little bar in Westland somewhere. I can't find it. That's literally where we did the reception. And it was just me. I did it solo. Now I think about
it. So you had no staff, like no one helping you.
I had no staff at that time. It was just me. And well, there was this other guy, but he did the decor. But in terms of the planning, it was just me. And I remember helping them tie their gifts and like I did everything. And after that event is when I recognized that I needed an assistant. Mm. Right. So I finished that event. They were happy. I didn't have any photos or anything of it, but I still kept doing the socials. And then the next event that I did was literally my ideal client. It was like the event that kind of set the tone for Purple Twirl with all of the events. So I was very, very blessed. I don't take it for granted at all. I was very blessed to have my ideal client from the very beginning when I started all the way till now. So she was my ideal client, but she was also my friend, you know. So I did her wedding and it was one of the most beautiful weddings, most very, very creative. I remember it was so creative because initially she wanted like a rainbow. Her colors were like rainbow. I was like, okay, that's cool and everything. It's also crazy, but we'll make it work, you know. So although she had the rainbow colors, I convinced her that the main color should be white and then it should be accents of the rest of the colors that she wanted. And it worked out so beautifully. So from that event, I got another referral. And then another one and another, and then it just...
This is more than beginner's life. When you were talking about how weddings have changed from 2010 to 2025 and obviously beyond in Ghana, you mentioned something about like a reels vendor, and it reminded me of like, you know, obviously 2025, there were like big celebrity weddings. And there was one particular wedding where I saw somebody on social media saying, you know, posting like one of those, like, I can't believe that the Lord did this for me. I was so excited to be a wedding influencer at this wedding. I literally was sitting with a friend of mine and I said, as I was reading, I said, wedding influencer. So I said to her, I said, wait, what's a wedding influencer? So she looked at me like I was, you know, like I'd been lost in like 1920 or something. Yeah, like I was lost in 1920. Because I didn't understand the concept of having like a wedding influencer at your wedding, right? It just felt really, and then I realized, I'm like, wow, there's a whole business, you know?
It's a whole business.
Yeah, and it makes me realize, you know, from the African perspective, like within the African creative and culture sector, how much the creative industry is actually creating so many jobs. Like there's so many jobs that wouldn't have existed before, you
know? Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it is. It's like people see the opportunity and they create a business out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because sometimes I am surprised at some of the jobs that I come across.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, not in Ghana. I haven't seen it in Ghana yet. I hope it doesn't come. But there's like a whole, I can't remember which African country. But then you can rent bridesmaids and groomsmen, which is a thing. And it's normal for them, you know? So, I mean, maybe it will be coming to Ghana soon. I don't know. But it hasn't arrived yet.
Wait, are they renting bridesmaids and groomsmen for aesthetics, I would imagine? Or that's very weird to me.
No, they're renting them for their weddings.
I'm saying, but why? Like, what's the reason behind it?
Because they're having a wedding and maybe they don't have friends that look nice and they want nice looking bridal parties. Yeah, I have no idea.
Yes.
I have no idea. But no, with the weddings for a lot of people, the wedding is heavy on aesthetics than it really is on the purpose, which is also a little sad, especially for me, because we're really not focusing on the right things. But I can't say that too loud because this is my job.
Yeah. And I'm sure with the expansion of the wedding industry, because I read somewhere that I think globally the wedding industry is valued at like $800 billion and counting. It's projected to be valued over 1.3 trillion. I haven't been able to find the numbers for Africa. I think that Africa probably would be like, I just think maybe they didn't count the whole of Africa, you know, when they were accounting for the global industry.
Possible.
Yeah.
Very possible.
Yeah. So, I mean, so from that perspective, if I'm somebody who's sitting outside of the wedding industry and you work within it, Would you say that it's like it's a business that's lucrative? Like, what makes it lucrative? Is it shaky? Because for me, from where I'm sitting, I'm thinking like the bigger the industry grows, the more money I'm making as a business, you know.
Yeah.
But your perspective, is it something that's lucrative or that kind of thing?
It is lucrative. It is lucrative. But my thing is, if you're coming into the wedding industry and you're trying to have longevity, you have to do it well. So you can be lucrative, but then you have, in order for your business to survive and go longer, you have to put things in place and you have to, as much as possible, provide or give out like the best possible service or products that you can. Mm-hmm. Because you can, although it's lucrative, it's also very saturated, right?
Yes, yeah.
Especially in Ghana at this point, it's very saturated. So you need a way to stand out. And to stand out, like give off your best, and I feel like that's the best way that your business will last that with time. Because what it is if you're giving off a service or a product, I feel, especially for services, I feel like your clients are like your best marketing tool.
Yes.
They are the best people that will go out and say you do an amazing job. And it's the same way if you're doing a bad job. That's how you will fall off as quickly, you know. So that's why you have to be very intentional about providing the best product or providing the best service consistently, and consistently improving yourself, improving your business to be able to last over time.
Yeah. And with the way the social media, obviously, I always think about the world, especially, you know, as somebody working in the creative and cultural sector, I think about the world as pre-COVID and post-COVID. You know, for example, like pre-COVID, you know, when you look at African music, it really, people were already starting to do well, but it's almost like as though during COVID, when the whole world's attention was on like, you know, everybody's holding their phones, nobody had anywhere to go.
Yeah.
The world became a stage, you know, and so it really blew up. I feel like it really became a catalyst for what we see now with the global music industry and what's happening with African music and just everything. You know, Africa is like basically the center of all things amazing. What changes has social media made that have been good ones and bad ones, you know, for you as somebody in the wedding industry? Like, what have been the positives and what have been the like, oh gosh, I wish we didn't have to deal with that?
Yeah. I mean, the positives is definitely reaching places and people that you wouldn't easily reach outside of your usual zone, which is Ghana, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being able to reach people beyond Ghana and across the world, that's definitely one huge positive for me with social media. What some of the changes that have come because of social media, one of the things is a lot of the clients, when they come, they kind of already have an idea who they want to use because they've seen the work online. And there's a positive and a negative to that, right? The positive to that for me as a wedding planner is that I don't have to do the extra legwork of trying to find the correct vendor or the right vendor or the right fit for the client. So that's like maybe one less thing for me to do. But the negative of that is that everything on social media is shiny. Everything on social media looks good. Nobody is going to put something bad on social media. And a lot of the time, what you're seeing on social media does not match the reality of the product or the service that the person can provide, right? So again, if the client or the bride does not have a planner like us at Purple Tour, where we can tell you that this is really what you're going to get and not what they're showing you, then you're in a fix. So a lot of people fall for these, a lot of companies, unfortunately, that are showing that they can do something or they can provide something when they really can't. But unfortunately, like I said, social media is shiny and it's pretty and it's bait. It's like they get a lot of people to buy into what they're doing on social media, hoping that it's what you'll get. And half the time, it's not really doesn't match. Yeah.
And from the perspective of being a creative, does it impact you? Does it limit your creativity as a wedding planner as well?
Definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It really does. Because like I said, you know, earlier I had mentioned how I love the creativity of planning, putting something together. But some of the times they'll come and they already know exactly who they want to use.
Yeah.
So then it doesn't give you, or you know, or they already have gone online and they're like, they know exactly what they want. So it doesn't give you the opportunity to kind of think outside the box anymore, because this is what they want.
Yeah.
You know? And yeah, you can't play around it and you can't just get creative with it. So yeah, it stifles it a little bit.
So just one more question on weddings before we go into the global growth and how the business has expanded, because I love the Purple Tool story. With weddings in Africa, specifically in Africa, and I would imagine it would be in countries like India and everything, like there's always this conversation about how the wedding is for the family. It's not like, you know, as the bride and groom, it's like you'll be very lucky, but the, ultimately, like last, the wedding is for the family, you know? So,
yeah.
And I can imagine, you know, doing weddings within West Africa, there are many times when it's like the bride is saying something and then the mother is saying something and then the future mother-in-law is saying something and then there's like, there must be like clashes.
Yeah.
Especially, yeah. Yeah. You know, with, I mean, I guess it would be with both, with traditional weddings and with the white wedding. How do mm-hmm. you, mm-hmm. how do you balance that? Because I can't even imagine what it would be like.
You know what? God has given me the spirit and the gift of managing human beings very well.
Yeah.
You know, and it's something that it just comes very naturally with me. Like I literally right now, as we sit here, I'm planning a wedding where the mom and the daughter are like butting heads.
Yeah.
But one of the ways we are managing it is like, we're literally the mediator. So she's the bride and I understand that it's her day, right? She wants what she wants. But the mom is also very traditional. It's like, you don't know what you're doing, woman. I need to tell you what you're doing.
Yeah.
So you listen to both sides. And when it comes to me, I know how to kind of mold it and then tell the bride. And I know how to mold it to tell the mother, such that they're both hearing what they want to hear, but it's really the same thing.
Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah.
So for example, maybe the bride wants to use maybe a particular decorator to do her event. And the mom wants another one. Ultimately, the bride should always have her way because it's her day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But if, for example, they want two separate decorators, it's fine. We'll listen to both of the decorators. We'll look at the inspiration if she has any, what she's looking for, the bride, what the mom is looking for. And try to find like a middle ground. Half the time, And because I'm also very professional and very honest with them, I would honestly tell them that this is why this one would be a better option. And this is the reason why we should go with this person instead of this person. And because it's coming from me, they would believe it. And it's a mother-daughter thing. Sometimes the daughter actually wants what the mother wants. It's just hearing it from the mother annoys her. So then when I say it, she'll take it. But when her mom says it, she won't take it.
Yeah,
that's what I've also learned.
Yeah,
that's all I also learned. So it's just managing it and knowing how to communicate it correctly to either of them.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also, I also learned very early on that you don't want too many people in the planning groups or in the process of the planning. So limiting the number of people making decisions is always a good idea.
Yeah.
We try to do that often. And if there's a bigger group, we will let them know, okay, fine, have your bigger group, discuss, finalize, and then give us the final decision that you have come to. If the mom wants something or the group wants something, we'll take it and then see how we can incorporate it into the event and then sell it to the bride. And usually she would agree with it. Or once it makes sense to her, or once she understands that we get it and we know how to manage it, then she's also okay with it. So it's just human management, really. I'm like a counselor, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you have like transferable skills now. And finally, from my perspective, like the way I've been seeing how the wedding industry has changed quite dramatically, especially within the continent, it's like traditional weddings are the thing. Like that's where people seem to be putting in all their energy. They get, you know, it's just like they're beautiful, and that's what people are seeing a lot of. For you, would you say that over the years that there's been more and more emphasis on traditional weddings, or has it always been like that and we just possibly, you know, not being in the industry, have not been aware?
No, it's been more and more like that. So a lot, you're right, a lot of emphasis has been on traditional weddings now. Mm-hmm. I also think it's part of the whole, what you said about pre-COVID, post-COVID, it's like there's a lot more attention on Africa.
Yeah.
And even in the past 3-4 years, there's a lot more attention on Ghana in terms of the traditions of Ghana. And a lot of people also now, especially with the Gen Z, they're also more in touch with the roots, you know. They all want to be associated with Ghana. You know, 10, 15 years ago, people didn't really want you to know that they're from Ghana or they're from Africa or what, when they're outside the country. But now they all want to come back and do the traditional thing, come with their friends from outside so they can experience the traditional culture of where they're from.
Yeah.
You know, so people are more more proud to be African and more proud to show their culture. So I do agree that the traditional wedding has become a lot more elaborate and a lot more, it's getting a lot more attention than it did before.
And is it more expensive in general from what you're seeing?
Compared to the white wedding?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. Okay. Not necessarily. I mean, it's more expensive now compared to back then.
Yeah.
Yes. But then if you're comparing the white and the traditional, not really.
Okay. All right. Okay. So now let's talk about just the growth of the business, which I'm so excited to see everything. So we've spoken extensively about the wedding side of Purple Tour Group, because I think everybody like loves wedding stories. But you've got, you've now, as I mentioned, it's now Purple Tour Group and there's different divisions within the business. So can you tell us about those other divisions and how they came about or the sequence within which you started to open the other divisions?
Yes. So I did start with Purple Twirl. When I started Purple Twirl Events, it was one of those where I knew I wanted to do weddings. It was just a wedding planning company that I did when I started it. So people would ask, oh, what do you do? I wanted to do parties too. So they would ask, what do you do? Oh, we do weddings and parties and other social events, but we don't do funerals.
Yeah.
That was me the first maybe five to 8 years of Purple Twirl. But as time went on, so we had clients and then the clients started losing family, right? Yeah. And they would come back to us because they trusted what we did with their events and they wanted that same quality of service for the funerals, you know? So because of that, we started the funeral planning company, which is Solemn Events. I started that with my partner and friend, Mansa. So Solemn Events started. And that one solely focused on funerals. And funerals are also a huge deal in Ghana. And again, funerals as early as 5 years ago and now, it's like day and night. They're completely different. Just as complex as weddings or even more so, you know. They become more complex than they were before. So then we started Solemn Events, which does the funerals. And then we also have Cornerstone Events. Cornerstone Events also came from requests for corporate events. And the main reason why I had to separate the two is because of the marketing. Because, you know, Purple Twirl, like I said, the name was very intentional and it didn't match the corporate event client. You know, it didn't sound or feel, the feel and sound of the brand was not the same for corporate clients. So I came up with Cornerstone Events and that came from Christ being the cornerstone. Mm. That particular song was where I got that name from. And I started Cornerstone Events, which focuses solely on corporate events, conferences, summits and things like that. And then we now, a couple of years ago, I branched out into, well, not really branched out, still the same events, but doing global events, going global with event planning where we're doing events outside of the country, outside of Ghana. And that came up with Milestones. So Milestones by Purple Twirl is more of, that company is more of planning milestones, birthdays, anniversaries, things like that for clients who are either in Ghana or outside Ghana, but they want to have their events or hold their events outside the country. So we do that for Milestones. That's why the name Milestones by Purple Twirl. So although we have Purple Twirl for the weddings, once we have a wedding that's going outside the country, it becomes a milestone by Purple Twirl event.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what was the first event that you planned outside of Ghana, and which country was it?
Yeah. So it was interesting. But no, the very first event, it was an anniversary, a 10-year anniversary that I did in Portugal, Cascais, Portugal. And it wasn't a huge event. It was for about 70 guests. And you know, I actually really loved working there because the people were very flexible and they were very friendly. I really did love working there. And back then I would work with So we identified the hotel that we were going to have the event at, and a lot of the guests stayed at the same hotel as well. But then the location was also such that it was a walking distance to a lot of tourist sites and a lot of other options for accommodation for guests, which was also very important, right? So when we identified the hotel, one of the big things that that hotel had, which was different from a lot of the other hotels in the area, was that they had this this space. It was like a little events space, which was in the basement of the hotel, right, which did not disturb the rest of the guests in the hotel. So because of that, we could go till like late, because you cannot take Africans anywhere and tell them their party's ending at 10 p.m.
When it only started at 10 p.m., what are you talking about?
Listen, that was very important. Like, we need to be sure that we can close at least 2 a.m., you know? So when we identified the hotel, they had a planner, like a event planner who was part of their staff. So it was also a blessing, you know? So we used her a lot to get a lot of the referrals. So it was just, I found that it was just a lot of communication, like just intentional communication of exactly what I wanted or what my vision was for the clients, and being able to communicate that to them. And them understanding it and just giving like feedback back and forth, like a lot of meetings. And it was a good event in the end, you know. Everybody was very happy. We had a really, really lovely DJ, yeah, who was also from there, but he also understood the assignment, you know. Yeah. It was a really good event. It was a really good event. I really enjoyed working at that event. Yeah.
And so you mentioned with this particular event, everything, it was, you know, you were blessed enough to get like the right kind of people and have an event planner. When it comes to countries where perhaps, you know, it's not happening at the hotel, they don't have an in-house event planner. I mean, the Portuguese language, I don't know if you speak Portuguese. I'm sure it must have been a little bit like, So when you, for other countries, like how do you get the right suppliers when you're doing events outside of Ghana, or let me say the West Africa, because you're obviously familiar with working within the West African space.
For other,
how do you get the right people
for other country?
Yeah, because as you said, that social media is so shiny. So people only ever post their best days on social media. This will be like vendors as well, you know. So when you're trying to find, or do you generally fly in a team? Like, how does that work for you from a business structure perspective?
So, because I understand social media and I understand how it is to be a planner here, I presume it's the same everywhere, where you can't fully rely on what you see online, right? So I would be going in blind if I just went and picked vendors from their social media and said, these are the people that I want to work with. So because of that, I'm very intentional. And with all of my events that I do outside, I'm intentional in finding an on-site person, someone who lives there, someone who understands that this hotel is great. It's amazing. But then you have to drive on really bad road for 30 minutes to get there. You know, they would understand that, okay, this hotel is great, but it's too far from the city center. You know, the little things that you will only understand as a local is very, very important in making decisions for any event. So I always make sure that I find an on-site person who lives in the country. And that person is my main point of contact for all of the events that I do. I will go and do a lot of research and have a minimum of like 5 different folks. I will have a meeting with every single one of them. And again, based on experience, instincts, the way they answer the questions that I ask them, it helps me know that we're a right match, because we have to have the same energy. You know, we have to have the same energy. They have to be knowledgeable. There's certain things that I would look out for in an on-site coordinator that I will get in those interviews, technically they are interviews, right? So I identify them, and then once I identify them, then I start to translate the vision the same way to them. So I explain to them what I want. A lot of the time, they have an idea of which vendor can do what. I will have the meetings with the vendors the same way I would if I was here, you know. So identifying the vendors. And I won't just go, because you said use this vendor, it's just that one. I want options, you know, because I want the best for my clients. Not only the best in service, but the best price as well, because that's also very important. So just identifying the right vendors with the help of this on-site person. And once all of the vendors are identified, then we do the recce trip to the country we're going to. And during that time, I am also just making sure that I am going to see and really literally meet you in person, discuss even more detail, see exactly what you're going to be doing for the clients on the day, and just make sure that what you have said you will provide is something that you really can provide. And I can see the venue and kind of visualize exactly what we want to do for the client. Mm. So once we have that on-site recce, which is usually months out, a lot of the time, a lot of things will come up. Different things will come up, why something wouldn't work because of XYZ. And although you have that on-site coordinator, they don't have your vision. So yeah. Although they might say it would work, when I go, I'm like, this might not, it's not quite it. And then you make all of those tweaks, and then you're just a lot more comfortable after that venue recce, because you're like, yeah, things are going to go well. And then between that time, we're just finalizing the little details until the event date comes up. And then I usually would go with at least one member of my team from Ghana, and then work with the rest of the team from there in executing the event.
When it comes to planning a funeral in Ghana specifically versus a wedding, what are some of the main differences from the cost to the detail that people might be surprised about, you know? And also for you, which one is the more stressful one?
All right. So funerals are very interesting in Ghana. I love funerals because although it's almost a similar format for the most part, the different cultures, it's like I get to learn a lot about the different cultures in Ghana and going to different parts of the country and everything. Now with funerals, what maybe people who are not in Ghana don't know is that funerals are like the one social event that you can make your money back from funerals. With the money you spent in planning the funeral, you can make it back. Then this is because, because there are donations. People give donations, like the guests that come, they give donations to the family, to the bereaved, and things like that. And they can, depending on whose funeral it is, they can literally make back the money and more. So that's one major thing. In terms of planning, funerals are actually, one of the biggest differences between funerals and weddings is the number of guests. Most funerals would start, you know, the average number of guests, like I said, in Ghana is like 350. It's recently that it's gone up to the 600s and the thousands, because now we have the space for it, right? But for funerals, we've done funerals for like 5,000 people. 1,000 to 1,005 is like average.
That's a lot.
It's like, that's like the average funeral number in Ghana. And these days, like I said, they've also become more complex now than they were before. There are, depending on where or who has passed as well, these days there's this new trend where we're doing funeral dinners. And this is the funeral dinners. Now, these funeral dinners, I'll tell you where they came from. See, almost everything that happens with the traditional events in Ghana, there's a reason they happen, or there's a traditional meaning to it, which just evolves into the modernity of the world that we are right now. Now, typically, a typical funeral, they would have the funeral, the family would sit up until from morning till 6 p.m. 6 p.m. is usually the cutoff time. And at that 6 p.m., the guests leave. And then the immediate family who were sitting the whole day and receiving guests and greeting guests, they go home. And they are hosted into a small intimate dinner where it's just them eating. So now that is what has evolved into this huge thing where it's literally, it could be someone's wedding. There's like chandeliers, there's everything. There's, think of a wedding, but in black and red.
Chandeliers?
Which is the funeral colors.
I'm so confused.
It's like a, it's a full blown production of a dinner worthy of an awards night dinner. You know what I mean?
Oh.
But then this is for after the funeral, then guests would go and have a full-blown dinner with a band. There's a DJ. There's a cocktail mixologist. Yes.
What?
Yes. Yes. It's not as solemn anymore. So that trend started maybe in the last year or so. It's very recent.
So means that we're about to see it blow up. We're about to see it really blow up.
Yes. It's definitely about to blow up. It's definitely about to blow up even more. So yeah, that has made it even more complex and the necessity for a funeral planner. Because before, you're going to church, you're going to do the burial, and then you'll sit until 6 p.m. And that was it. Usually, at first, they would just serve water. But now you're serving water, you're serving drinks. Some people will serve food packs. They're food packs, and then they'll come with kebabs. They'll come around with fried yam. Someone will come. Listen. It's evolving every time. So it's not, honestly, because of the tradition of it, it's not as detailed when it comes to planning. It's not as detailed as weddings because certain things are automatic. They're very, very automatic. And this is how it's done in this culture and nothing will be changed about it. So it's pretty seamless, you know, in that sense, as opposed to weddings where it's a personal opinion. This is how I want it. This is how I don't want it this way, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the two main differences between the two.
I feel like as though we probably will have to have a conversation a year from now because differently, I feel, my mind is still stuck on chandeliers at a wedding dinner. At a funeral dinner.
Yeah.
I can't.
Yeah, just imagine like a full-blown wedding decor. That could be, it could be a wedding.
No, this is wild to me. But I mean, I guess we'll see. I mean, just with that, I could be wrong, but I do recall that there's funeral tourism has started to grow in Ghana, where people, mm-hmm. especially from the diaspora, come to Ghana to experience funerals. Have you heard about that? I was just like, this is... Yeah.
That's very interesting. I have not heard about that, but that's very interesting.
There's so many different aspects to it. You know, the 1 week that this is... So it's become a whole thing.
Yes.
And I think it's leading from the whole... Yeah, from the last bath and everything. So people have now are trying to learn the culture a lot more. And like you said, at funerals...
That makes sense.
Yeah, it's the funerals where you can get a lot of culture.
With regards to the funeral tourism, you know, there's this by the beach road. There are these folks that do the coffins that kind of match the trade or the craft that you used to do. So if you're like a farmer, they could do your coffin shaped like a hoe, like that for farming. If you're like, or plantain,
what?
If you rear chickens, they could do a coffin shaped like a chicken and things like that. They do that. Yeah, there's that as well. I know that's also a big deal and it's big in the diaspora. They do love that.
Also, wedding mourners, like people pay for people to cry at weddings, right?
Yes.
I saw some people rolling.
Not weddings,
in front
funerals.
Of,
yes.
Funerals, pardon me. Funeral mourners.
Yeah. You pay people to cry at funerals. And then you pay also recently, this is also recent, you pay people to greet. So greeters for the funeral. So you know when, like I said, the donations received from guests. So when guests come and make especially a substantial donation, for the most part, the family, which is hired, would get up, go greet, thank them, and then come back, sit. So they're seated with the family dressed like a family, but they're hired. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know. I think I might be in the wrong business.
I'm telling you, the businesses just keep coming. It's like people find a need, that they identify a need and they fill it. I mean, that's how you create a business, right?
And that's is African ingenuity right there. Nobody can ever say we don't come up with ideas. Mm-hmm. We'll figure it out.
Yep.
So, okay. Abukoma, I know that, so now you've mentioned all the different expansions within the business. Is there anything else with regards to Purple Twill? Any new divisions or anything like that that we should be looking out for?
Absolutely. My new baby is coming out at the end of this month, which is November 2025. I will be launching the Purple Print. It's going to be your event planning blueprint. So this is an online learning platform, which is available online to beginners, intermediate, and advanced learners. You're already in the business, you're looking to learn, or you're just an event enthusiast who's looking to learn how to plan events, the Purple Twirl way. I'll be teaching that on this event learning platform.
I love that. So you really have the whole industry on lock. She's like, what competition? Lock. I am the competition. What do you mean?
Scrambled paychecks.
As an entrepreneur, month end is so quick. Like, I remember being on the receiving end where I was getting a salary versus now when I'm on the receiving end, it's like, oh my gosh, it's taking so long. When it's at the month end, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's around the corner, you know?
Yeah.
So for you, and I know that like payday is very different. When you're an entrepreneur versus when you're an employee, payday is very different. What is the craziest what months do you remember, or any time that you have a story or something that was like, wow, you didn't know how you were going to make this month end, and how do you payments and how did you get past that?
Yeah, if you're an entrepreneur and you haven't had this situation before, then what really are you, right?
Exactly.
No. So this was a couple of years ago. So my payroll is managed by my accountants, right? And usually they would send me the payroll, like all the details of the payroll and payments, about a week or more before. So we make payments on the 28th of each month. So like a week before, they would say, send the documents in email, and I pretend like I haven't seen it because it's annoying. And then on the day, which is usually the 28th, or if it's the weekend, like they'll do it the Friday before, she would send me a message. Okay, we're going to make the payments. Please send the codes from the bank, right? I'm like, already? But then this one time, I knew we didn't have money in the account.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I knew she was going to come and ask. But I don't know, it's like I'm pretending it doesn't exist or something. I don't even know what I was thinking. But yeah, she asked for the codes. I'm like, madam, I don't have. There's nothing in the account. You know what I mean? So what I did was, now I don't advise this, anybody who is an event planner upcoming or you, anyway. So I have two separate accounts. I have accounts for our finances, and then there's a separate account that we have that we pay vendors in. So the client gives us the money and then we distribute it to the vendors. That's a separate account. So in that account, for the most part, there's funds in there. Now, a lot of the vendors, or this particular vendor in this case, she was a vendor friend of mine, and her event was a couple of months away. And I've had like previous conversations with her, and I know that she doesn't, the clients will pay the money because they want to know that they have paid it off, or they've made a deposit, or they've just made a bulk payment for this event, right? But this friend of mine, she doesn't like to receive her money too far out from the event date. So she asked me to keep it for her, you know? So in this instance, I was like, girl, I need money. And at that time, you know, we stagger our event fees to the clients. So they pay over time. And I knew like in the next two, three weeks, we'll be receiving some funds. So I called her. I'm like, madam, what's up? Your money is me. It's in my account. I mean, you're not going to get it until a couple of months anyway. So this is what I'm going to do. I'm expecting money in 2 weeks, 2-3 weeks, and then I'll pay it back. Or it'll be back in the account. Honestly, I could have done it without her knowing. Seriously, I didn't have to. But the integrity in me will not let me.
Yeah.
You know, so I told her about it. And then she was like, yeah, it's cool. So that's what happened. I just transferred funds and then made the payments.
Financial red flags.
When it comes to financing and red flags, specifically in the event planning sector and all of that, how can you tell if a client is going to give you issues from a financial perspective? Like, what are the financing red flags when you start working with a client and you're like,
That's a very good question. But yeah, one of the ways is, like I said, we have contracts. So before we start working your event, you make a deposit and sign the contract. Otherwise, we don't start the event. And then I said we stagger the payments. So once we stagger the payments, you know exactly when your next payment is due, et cetera, et cetera. So when your payment is due and if there's a delay, you don't acknowledge it, you just let it pass, things like that. If I have to come and kind of start prompting you and begging you actually to pay, then it's marked yellow. It's not immediately a red. But when it's really close to the event day, and this applies to all of the vendor payments as well, I've had to cancel an event, planning an event, because the vendor, the client will not pay the vendors like two weeks to the event. And vendors have not, like even a deposit hasn't been made. So I canceled the wedding on them. I didn't do it. They found someone else to do it. Because who it's two weeks to the event and you have this huge bill. Like, I'm not going to be found. And you know, the vendors, because of our relationship with them, they would go along and they would do the event because we have a relationship with them. You know, they would go on my word and say they would do the event. But then the red flag is when there are excuses with payments, checks are bouncing, promises are being made and they are not following through with the payments, you know, that type of thing. Then immediately my guard goes up and I'm going ham on you. But, you know, outside of that, that is a very rare moment with our clients. I've been very blessed to have clients who just get it. And it comes with the type of clients that are the ideal clients that I have targeted with my business. They're not out there to get you, you know. There's one in a few that come in and I have to have the situation where I have to cancel because you're not paying my vendors. You know, but then it doesn't happen often. And I can imagine it would happen a lot if you don't have certain systems in place with your business. If you don't have certain systems in place, it could happen a lot with you. So you have to be very intentional about that, very intentional about receiving payments and following up for payments for not just your service, but for other vendors as well.
Talent and hiring culture.
When it comes to hiring and just creating an overall workplace culture, whether it's at the office on a day-to-day or the vendors that you work for, I mean, sorry, the vendors that you bring in or vendors that work with Purple Twill, how do you hire and bring people on based on skill, or is it based on them fitting into the culture, or like how, and also what kind of environment do you like to have around you when it comes to the work environment?
Okay. So when it comes to hiring, especially with Purple Twill, you know, in the beginning, I mentioned how event planning wasn't a thing. So I never really intentionally hired for skill because we didn't have the event planning skill back then until recently. So I would hire and then I would teach and train. A lot of my hires have been based on that, where they would come with little or no skill at all. And then I would train them into the planners or the coordinators or the staff that I would want to work with. Now, my management style is also, I don't like to micromanage. I'm not a micromanager. So I like to create that type of atmosphere where they have some kind of autonomy in decision making and they grow into their own. I like to give them the opportunity to kind of grow into your own person. I like to give them that opportunity to do that. And also learning or training is a big deal for me as well. I want them to be able to not only learn on the job, but learn outside. Like, I don't want to have staff that are so stuck at working here that once they leave here, they don't know what they're doing. I want them to be able to have a plan for themselves, for the future, for the next 5, 10, 15 years. I mean, you don't have to be at Purple Twill. I don't believe that you have to be at Purple Twill forever to work with me forever. I believe in growth. I believe that you can outgrow this space. And I'm very open to supporting them into doing or being whoever they want to be outside of Purple Twill. And they just, I want them to be honest and very open about that part of themselves as well. If they have like a side business or anything at all that is outside of Purple Twill, I'm not going to stifle that and say, hey, you work here, so you can't do anything like that. So yeah, the work culture is more open door policy. You can come in at any time. They don't call me madam. I'm Abokuma. You know, we are all on first name basis. I'm not going to be, like, sometimes I hear in my head, this is my boss. I'm like, who is your boss? In my head, I'm like, wait, she's talking about me? I'm the boss.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, so that's like, I want to have that freeness to be able to express yourself. Because again, creatives, you don't want to be in a little box where everything is rigid, you know? Although my systems are rigid, there's still flexibility in terms of how we want it to work.
CEO Wellness.
What do you do to take care of yourself to ensure that you show up for yourself while you're showing up for your clients and you're showing up at work? And also, how do you avoid burnout? Like, how do you know that burnout is coming, and what do you do? Like, when are you pushing the brakes?
That's a good question. But I am actually quite intentional about taking care of myself outside of work. I am very strict with not working from home until recently, literally as recent as last month, where I set up my home office. But even then, if I'm not in there, I'm not working, you know. So until last month, I wouldn't, like, when I get home, I don't work. I don't do any work at all. I am just relaxing and making sure that the laptop is not coming out, or even my phone. Just having that separation of work phone and personal phone, I would put the work phone away so I'm not on there constantly responding and just on it constantly. So having that separation was very important to me. I do a lot of journaling. So as part of my morning routine, I would journal, I would pray. I read the Bible or read a scripture or something like that. Those things really, in the mornings, it really calms me a lot, you know. And I actually love driving. I enjoy driving, and I love music. So when I'm able to have like a whole karaoke session in my car, it really lifts my spirits. It's very interesting. It's different. I know I can listen to music at home or wherever, but I don't know, it's different in the car. The acoustics are just amazing. So I love doing that. And when I do feel burnout coming, I take a break. And sometimes you don't have the capacity to take like a 2-week break, a 1-week break. I would do a 1 day. Like, I would literally look at my calendar, look at which day I can cancel everything. I will cancel everything and then I will do nothing. Maybe I'll get a massage and then, but for the most part, a lot of the time, days like that where I can feel the burnout coming, I would just pause. Like I said, pick a day, clear out the calendar, stay in bed and watch Netflix and do nothing else.
Unscrambled wisdom.
Often, like, before people go into business, there's always this thing that people think, you know, because you can listen to a podcast, read a book, and it's like, if you do this, this is going to happen. If you do that, this is wisdom. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the one thing that you thought you knew about business till you got into business and you literally had to throw that ideology out the window, be like, this doesn't work in practical?
Honestly, the SWOT analysis.
Oh my God, yes, yes, right. Like,
what is that? Who uses that? What is that? Like, what is it, really?
Exactly.
Make it make sense. I don't use it. I mean, it makes sense when you were learning it. It's like, oh, what are your... And then just like paying attention to your competitors. Like, what are your competitors doing? What are they... Da, da, da. I do not know what they're doing. I don't care what they're doing. I am just focused on me, focused on my clients, focused on giving the best to my clients, you know, just doing the best that you can do. What they're doing, let them do what they're doing. For me, I don't know what they're doing. I am doing what I'm doing, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that's one of the things that I definitely is not practical for me as a business. And then something as well that I felt like a lot of people think it's normal, or it's for folks that are successful, is I really thought that people that were successful had it all figured out. Because you see them talking, like me talking on this podcast, looking like, you have it all figured out. And no, still figuring it out. It's a learning process every day. It is not all I don't have it all figured out.
It's like every day, you learn every day. And sometimes it's almost every minute. It's like you have to learn something new. Because when things get thrown at you, they're thrown at you and you're just like, you've got to be able to make quick decisions, you know, and figure this thing out. Mm-hmm. And there's always like a context story. Everything is context, right? In business, it's not so cookie cutter. I actually have a theory with the SWOT analysis. I think it's just so people can pay more at university. That's what I think it is. So the lecturers can feel like they're doing something. That's what I think it is.
It makes sense because it's so pointless. It is so pointless. Yeah. That's what.
Especially in an African context. Yeah, especially in an evolving, when things are evolving so quickly and everything. It's like, what do you mean?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
You're reminding me. Yeah, that thing is very irritating.
Scramble or stable?
I want to wrap up the conversation with a quick game. So it's called Scramble or Stable.
Okay.
So you pick which one fits best. So the first one is Ghanaian vendors arriving on time for an event. Is that a scramble or stable?
Listen, this is a biased question. It can't be one. Well, it's stable for me. It's stable for me, especially with vendors that I work with, because they know how we work. When I say 10, they know it's 10.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, for the most part, I can totally understand how it could be a scramble.
A bride changing her color scheme the night before. Scramble or stable?
That would be a scramble for sure, because everything is set. Like the night before, we're already setting up.
When clients say it's just a small event, but it's for 600 people, scramble or stable?
Scramble. That is not a small event for 600 people. Are you mad?
Yeah. Are you mad? Your phone battery after a wedding or event weekend, scramble or stable?
Stable.
Stable. You have stable, power banks, don't you? You've got many power banks.
I do.
Clearly. Balancing back-to-back events in December, scramble or stable?
It's a bit of both. It's a bit of a scramble, to be very honest. I won't lie.
Here's a big one for Ghana. Getting through an event without rain, scramble or stable?
Scramble. Goodness, because you know, we almost never have a real backup plan for rain.
Yeah.
Like, unless the venue already has an indoor space with a capacity big enough for the guests, there's never a real, real, real backup, especially if it's like torrential rain like we have.
Yeah.
It's a scramble.
Planning your own birthday party, scramble or stable?
Oh, it's stable. I let my people do it.
She's like, I have people on salary. What do you mean?
Yeah. I have people.
Yeah. All right. And finally, trying to rest after a big event, but your brain's already planning the next. Scramble or stable?
Oh, scramble. Yes. Yeah. I know it never rests.
It's never. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's like how we'll bring this whole conversation to an end. Abukoma Ellis, honestly, it's been fantastic speaking to you. Thank you so much for being a guest on the Salary Scramble.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Salary Scramble with Lee Kasumba. Hit like, share, and subscribe. Find us everywhere. The real stories begin.